Republican nomination, the culmination of his unorthodox campaign. But the Republican convention is also exposing the downside of a freewheeling approach. We'll take your calls just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand with our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, UNF's Matt Corrigan takes your calls as he looks at the ups and downs of the Republican convention in Cleveland as it moves ahead into day 3. With Donald Trump now officially the party's standard bearer, get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Plus, how Hands-On Jacksonville is helping out local veterans this week. Then later, the rousing rock and roll of the new show Memphis at Players by the Sea. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Donald Trump, officially now the presidential nominee of the Republican Party.
I have the incredible honor of not only being a part of the ride that's been this election process and to watch as a small fly on the wall what my father has done in creating this movement, because it's not a campaign anymore, it's a movement. Speaking to real Americans, giving them a voice again. And it is my honor to be able to throw Donald Trump over the top in the delegate count tonight with 89 delegates and another 6 for John Kasich. Congratulations, Dad, we love you!
Trump's son, Donald Jr., making it official. Last night, Trump claimed the nomination in day 2 of the GOP convention in Cleveland. The second day went a little more smoothly than the first after a series of hiccups involving everything from serious dissent on the floor over Trump's nomination to a plagiarism scandal after a speech given by Melania Trump. There was even a Novovirus scare. So, day 3 is tonight with a slate of high-profile speakers scheduled to address the crowd, including Trump's running mate Mike Pence and others. With his thoughts on the convention rollout so far, we're pleased to welcome UNF political scientist Matt Corrigan. Always great to see you, Matt. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
And to our callers, did you watch the Republican convention last night? What are your thoughts about the convention so far as Donald Trump officially claims the nomination? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Your thoughts on the first 2 days of the convention? And where do we begin? There's a lot to discuss.
that's a big question. I think there's a disconnect between what the convention should be trying to accomplish and what's going on and just political strategy. Now, people like me were, very hesitant to get on the Trump bandwagon early on. Because he wasn't playing by the rules. But that strategy worked in the primary and worked better than I think anybody could have anticipated.
You heard his son say this is a movement.
Right. And clearly, he hit a nerve within the party. He beat 17 people, other people, and he got, over 14 million votes. The problem is he's got to move to the general election where he needs 65 million votes. And I think the biggest issue with the convention should be basically a layup in terms of messaging and political organization, because it's basically a 4-day commercial for your party and your candidate. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to get off message. And I just don't think they've had a consistent message except anti-Hillary Clinton. Like, for example, last night was supposed to be about the economy. And really, they got off on, Dr. Ben Carson and Lucifer and really, Chris Christie talked about Secretary Clinton and really went after her, probably effectively. But again, it wasn't the message of the economy. And so I think what they've got to figure out is how are they going to move from that 14 million votes to that 65 million votes? And to me, that's their biggest test.
The issues that they had on day one, the dissent over the roll call, a substantial minority of delegates saying they did not want to close it out for Donald Trump, then allegations of Melania Trump plagiarizing a couple of sections of Michelle Obama's 2008 convention speech. Do you think that those will interfere in any way with those who are still undecided, that very small group of voters still undecided as Donald Trump seeks that general election messaging, as you said? What about the criticism that if the convention, which is supposed to be a layup, isn't smooth, what does that say about the overall campaign apparatus and Donald Trump's ability to govern?
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line, this isn't a traditional campaign, and that has a lot of advantages, and you saw that in the primary, that they were able to break a lot of rules, didn't spend a lot of money on commercials, et cetera. But you're basically running 50 separate campaigns now for individual states, and if you want to get down to the swing states, maybe you're talking 10 to 12, but still that's a big operation, and your primary setup is should be different from your general election setup, and they're just not there. I mean, you just shouldn't have a speech that Michelle Obama gave, you know, in 2008. Appear in a speech that Mrs. Trump is giving in 2016. I mean, that's, you just use plagiarism software. That's easy, and so that's an indication of problems, I think, in terms of organization.
On the other hand, the campaign and the party has two more days to get their message out. What do you think we can look for tonight?
Yeah, I think tonight, I believe it's the vice presidential selection, and he is a conservative Republican. So again, he'll speak to the conservatives in the party. But again, that points to the fact that they're trying to unify their party, where at this point they need to be expanding the electorate. And so again, with the selection of Mike Pence, I think that fortified and probably helped some with party unity, but it also shows that they've got a long way to go to reach out to a general electorate.
And we'll go to your calls for UNF's Matt Corrigan in just a moment as we discuss the Republican convention and the road ahead to the general election. Of course, the Democrats will officially coronate Hillary Clinton next week in Philadelphia. The number to call in, 549-2937. So not only is Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate, speaking tonight in Cleveland, here are some other high-profile names: Marco Rubio, Florida's own; Ted Cruz, who came closest to toppling Donald Trump in the primaries; Governor of Wisconsin Scott Walker; Newt Gingrich speaking tonight; and Donald Trump's son Eric, among others. Your thoughts on that lineup and how they can smooth out the kinks, I guess, as they move ahead?
Yeah, I think Marco Rubio is speaking on tape or by remote, and because he's not at the convention, and he's kind of gone back and forth whether he's going to go to the convention or not. And that really shows kind of the ambivalence for Trump here in Florida, especially in southeastern Florida. And so it'll be interesting to see what Marco Rubio has to say. And is he going to talk about the party, or is he going to talk about Trump?
Do you think he was splitting the difference by appearing on video rather than being there in person?
Yeah. I mean, clearly, Trump and Rubio are not on the same page. When Rubio announced that he was going to run for Senate, it was almost, you know, saying, listen, if Trump wins, you need somebody in the Senate who can check him. And so, and Miami-Dade County, did not go for Trump in the primary election. And so there's a lot of work to be done there.
Okay, let's go to your calls right now. Have you been watching the Republican convention? What are your thoughts on Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton? By the way, there is a Libertarian ticket doing decently well in the polls. We get calls about that campaign, too, Gary Johnson and William Weld. We want your calls, 549-2937. Steve on the South Side. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Is it just me, or was there a certain comedic irony when Trump's third wife gets up onto the podium and talks about his loyalty to family? Or will that just be a late-night punchline? I'll take my comment off the air. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. You know, it is remarkable to see conservative evangelical Christians coalescing around Donald Trump, this guy from New York, this foul-mouthed, thrice-married womanizing guy. I think that that has been well established.
Sure.
What about that?
Yeah, I think what conservative evangelicals are looking at is he's made it clear that, you know, he wants to welcome Christianity back into the public conversation, and his view that'll take a tough line on ISIS and other extremist groups. And so
that overrides morality concerns for a lot of folks.
And I'm thinking, you know, how can Trump get away with some of this? And obviously, on the other end, you've had Secretary Clinton just go through this FBI investigation.
Yeah.
I think we're at the point where really voters from all stripes are just saying, you know, none of these politicians or people who want elected office really have a high standard, so we're just going to pick who we want anyway. And so I think the day of where, you know, Gary Hart's campaign in the 1980s was torpedoed by rumors or really evidence of an affair, I think those days are gone, because people just don't expect that much from our elected officials anymore.
Sad to say, but yeah. Let's go back to your calls at 549-2937. We have calls from all over our listening area. Let's go down now to Fleming Island. Pat in Fleming Island. Hello, Pat.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. I just want to ask, you know, watching this whole circus take place over the last almost year of all these people, what are the three issues that Republicans really, what issues? You know, they talk about, Trump talks about beating ISIS. My question is how? He talks about fixing Obamacare. How? I can't, other than platitudes of real big and huge and make America great, my question is how? And I haven't heard it from any of these people. What am I missing, I guess, is the question.
Okay. Thanks, Pat.
You're not missing anything. I mean, I think that's the attraction of Trump and, you know, from standpoints of others, his real weakness. He's been all over the place on policy. Just last night, Chris Christie made a number of points against Secretary Clinton's foreign policy, but really – they were against Donald Trump's foreign policy as well, because he's been all over the place. Your reference to ISIS, when he was asked recently, does that mean a lot of ground troops? Oh, no, that doesn't mean a lot of ground troops. We're going to work with our partners, even though he's really talked against many of the partners overseas, including NATO. And so there's not a lot of specifics here. This is an emotional movement, an emotional campaign. It's basically us against them. It's law and order. He's trying to resurrect, the 1968 campaign of Richard Nixon and to some extent George Wallace. And a commentator said last night that, you know, the Trump campaign organization is trying to blow the campaign, but the circumstances around our country and around our world are giving the Trump campaign a shot, because, you know, with all of the terrible incidents that have occurred here and overseas, law and order sounds right and sounds like a message that might go somewhere. And so if we have a number of these incidents between now and Election Day, does that give more strength to Donald Trump? It hasn't so far, but I could see where it might. And frankly, you know, his campaign said it. Somebody, his campaign representative said it. The more, you know, problems we have out in the world, discord, protests, some of these
incidents. That plays in his favor.
That plays into his interests. Yeah.
Let me ask you as a follow-up. We've seen this extraordinary division this election cycle with three former presidents sitting out the Republican convention, or nominees, rather. John McCain, Mitt Romney, and former President Bush, all declining to be part of Trump's coronation. At the same time, the aggregate of most polling is showing Hillary Clinton with something like a 75% chance of beating Donald Trump. But as we've learned, through this entire year, polls can be wrong. The experts can be wrong. Mm-hmm. And so for the Hillary Clinton campaign, as they're watching this convention and they're aware that the law and order message may resonate very strongly with some of the voters they're trying to win over, if you're Hillary Clinton, how do you come out of the gate with your convention after what we're seeing in Cleveland this week?
Yeah, I do think they're going to have to address the either however you want to say it, the law and order question or the security question. There are some rumors that she's considering a general to be her vice president. So that would be interesting to see. But, you know, I think it a number of things would have to fall in place because what I think a lot of people don't understand, if you look at the electoral map, basically, Democrats start off with 200 electoral votes in a relatively easy fashion.
They have the Electoral College advantage.
Yeah,
demographically.
And so they need about 70, you know, more electoral votes. And if Democrats win Florida, it's very difficult for Republicans to win the Electoral College. And so the Republicans are up against this to begin with. And so they need, again, to concentrate on some of these states and to concentrate on some of these groups in these states. And so they've got that to deal with. Where I think you could change all that calculus is if you had a number of these events around the world and people mm-hmm. just are so fearful, they say, let's go with the strong man.
When you go to the website Real Clear Politics, Matt, and you look at the polling in all of the battleground states in this country, the ones that aren't that are still technically up for grabs, Hillary Clinton has the thinnest margin of victory in any of the swing states right here in Florida, less than 1%. In most of these other battleground states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, Virginia, North Carolina, Clinton is outpolling Trump by anywhere from 2 to 5 points. The only battleground where Donald Trump is ahead right now, according to this aggregate of polling, is Georgia, right up the road from us. Just some interesting data to look at.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's always been close. You know, we were the state of 2000, when you know, less than or just above.
How can we ever forget?
right, over 500 votes. And so for Democrats to be successful, they need high turnout, and it's going to be a close race, you know, within 5 points. The question is, has Donald Trump alienated so many Hispanic voters? A number of Hispanic Republicans, by the way, there's more Hispanic Republicans in Miami-Dade County than there are Hispanic Democrats. So I'm really going to be looking at Miami-Dade County. If there's just a huge margin down there on election night, that's really bad news for Donald Trump. What they're hoping, the Trump campaign's hoping for, is generally Hispanic turnout is much lower than other demographic groups, and they're hoping that's going to keep up. Florida's going to be the test for that.
Hmm. Okay, let's go back to your calls for UNF's political scientist, Matt Corrigan. What are your thoughts about the Republican convention? Day three tonight, then the Democrats will unveil Hillary Clinton as their nominee in Philadelphia the following week. The number to join us as we talk politics is 549-2937. Haley is in Jacksonville. Hi, Haley. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually calling. I'm not that impressed with the Republican Party this year, and I think if there was ever a year to elect a third-party candidate, this would be a good one. Why isn't Gary Johnson getting more media coverage, and what can he do or what can we do to hear more about him?
Thanks for that call, Haley. I knew we'd get at least one call about former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson and his running mate from Massachusetts, the former governor of Massachusetts, right? William Weld.
Right.
The Libertarian ticket. What about them?
You know, the analogy I can give voters about the independent candidates or third-party candidates is that if you've ever played a board game, you've played it with somebody who knows all the rules and has all the advantages, you know, that's basically the way our electoral system is set up. It's set up for two parties, Republicans and Democrats, to have an overwhelming advantage. And so it's difficult for independents and it's difficult for third-party candidates to get on ballots, to get attention, to be real players. You would think this year, with a lot of dissatisfaction with both candidates, that this might be an exception, and it might. I think Johnson is doing okay in some of the polls, The problem is he's not a particularly charismatic figure. Somebody like Ross Perot was,
right.
And before he, this is ancient history, but he actually got out and got back in. If he hadn't gotten out of the race, he really
might have done better
if he had stayed consistent. And he got 20% in some of the states. And so I think if you're going to have a third party candidate, they've got to be a charismatic figure. Now, saying all that, there's so much dissatisfaction. The key for Johnson would be if he could get into the debates. If he could get into the presidential debates, then things might happen.
Let me ask you, because Johnson is polling at 13%. If he gets up to 15% in national polls, he would be eligible to appear on the debate stage with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. If he can crack that 15% mark, how does that play out in this race?
That helps.
He's on national TV with them.
Sure. That changes dramatically because, again, voters can see that as a viable alternative. And, I think it's mixed. You would think it probably hurts Republicans more than Democrats. But again, if you're looking for – a lot of people have said that this is a change election, that with the Bernie Sanders movement and the Donald Trump movement, that, listen, people just want something different. And the Democrats are nominating, an institutional, the face of the Democratic establishment. And so there may be room for some Democrats to look elsewhere.
Okay, 549-2937. Let's bring on Charles in Jacksonville now. Hey, Charles, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Matt, this is just a question. I just want your views on Donald Trump's Christian and conservative views. I mean, then you associate him with George Wallace. I'm having a hard time, picturing those two types of, perspectives together. With the divisiveness that this man has caused in this country and the stuff that he espoused, the bigotry, I just don't understand how the evangelicals or anybody that sees that they're Christians could, vote for him or even support him. So just want to hear your views concerning him being a Christian and being conservative. I don't understand what Christianity is. If he's a Christian, I don't understand what it is.
Yeah. Well,
thanks, Charles.
Well, clearly, he's run a divisive campaign and it's been he's trampled all over political correctness is one thing, but some of his comments have cut much deeper. And I think when Rudy Giuliani stepped to the up on the convention stage and spoke up for Donald Trump, what people forget is now I think that probably helps him with some constituents, but it doesn't help him with African Americans because Giuliani had a bad history with African Americans in the city. Mm-hmm. And so I think because Donald Trump has really run a divisive campaign that people are questioning how can, Christian groups support him. But there're gonna be some groups who talk about Secretary Clinton and her views on abortion and religion. And so at the end of the day, I don't think there is a perfect religious candidate that we're looking at. What I think with all of this turmoil in our society, a mistake that the Trump campaign has made in their presentation is, yes, people want law and order. Yes, people want change, but maybe not this much change and not to this extreme. And if you've got some of the racial issues that we've been dealing with, can people really look at the Trump campaign and say, man, he's going to bring us all together? I think that's a big strike against him.
We've heard a lot from the Republican convention stage the last couple of nights about the Democratic Party's obsession with identity politics, as it's called, trying to appeal to a coalition of different groups of people. Let me ask you as a follow-up, there's been polling to suggest that because Donald Trump has alienated African Americans, Latinos, women, and other groups, that for him to overcome those deficiencies, particularly in the Electoral College in the blue-leaning states, he would have to generate voter turnout support among white males in this country upwards of 60% to overcome those deficits. That's something that hasn't happened since Ronald Reagan was elected president. Is that even possible in this environment?
Well, I mean, sure, it's possible, but it's not likely. And that's why, again, I'm not sure the messaging of the convention. You want to expand your base. You want to expand. And it doesn't it seems to me like they're playing to the choir. And that's why I think we've had, you know, it's I think we're in for a long summer dealing with some of these racial issues, because I don't the Trump campaign's really not going to speak up on unity of the country. And, I think at the end of all of this, we'll see. It's a great test whether voting is a vehicle for people to put out their frustrations, both mm-hmm. those who are supporting Trump and those who are really against Trump. Are we going to see a big turnout among Hispanics? That's not a definite. Without Barack Obama on the ballot, are we going to see a big turnout of African Americans? That's not a definite. So we'll see if voting is going to be the vehicle to deal with some of this frustration.
All right. And Brett in Riverside. Hey, Brett, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. In my personal opinion, I'm not really all that concerned with who wins. To be honest, I believe we're going to have a divided Congress again. The Democrats might take the Senate. The Republicans are most certainly going to hold the House. I don't think either candidate's going to get anything done that's substantive. What I'm more concerned with is the 2 to possibly 4 Supreme Court seats that will be up for grabs during this next 4 years. We already have one vacant, and we have several septuagenarian justices that are probably pretty close to retiring. And my main concern is what either candidate will do when it comes down to those choices, because the Senate can only say no so many times. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Yeah, it's probably the most important issue in the election.
Yeah.
And among voters who follow politics daily, who either watch Fox News or watch CNN every day, I think it's a major issue. Once you start getting out to the broader electorate, I don't think it's the first issue on people's minds, but it probably should be.
Because it is ultimately that is the most important benchmark that the most important power, really, other than war powers, that a president has to affect the trajectory of the country.
And it's probably one of the Trump campaign's big cards that they're playing. And we've had a lot of questions about why are evangelicals supporting Donald Trump. The Supreme Court's a big issue in there, and so as we go forward. It's a huge issue. It's a great question, and it needs a lot more discussion.
Okay. Well, it is always great to speak with you, and we thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. Thanks for being here.
Okay. Thanks, Melissa.
Matt Corrigan, professor of political science with the University of North Florida, and much more still ahead. Later, the talented cast of Memphis at Players by the Sea. Also ahead, we'll tell you all about this week's Veterans Fair in Jacksonville, helping local families. Back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Welfare reform was supposed to help people get a job. Now, 20 years later, only a quarter of welfare dollars goes to basic assistance. A lot of it goes to other things, like this couple's workshop in Oklahoma.
So we're going to talk about love styles.
I don't know if that's the best way to spend a budget.
We take a welfare reform road trip with Marketplace on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
As Florida school districts prepare students for success in a global knowledge-based economy, how does arts education factor into the plan? Join WJCT for Community Thread, The Politics of Arts Education, as we explore this issue and how advocates are working to ensure that diverse perspectives are represented in the development of new arts policies. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on August 4th.
This program is underwritten by the Ann McDonald Baker Family Foundation. Vice President, take it or leave it.
I wouldn't be your Veep if there were a grassy knoll full of Jodie Foster fans in the front row at your inauguration.
On the next Fresh Air, as the political drama unfolds at the Republican convention, we talk about fictional presidential politics with the showrunner of HBO's Veep. David Mandel has just been nominated for several Emmys. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Parents, kids, you're invited to attend WJCT's Back to School Bash, August 6th at 2 p.m. at the WJCT Studios. Watch the new Odd Squad movie on the big screen, enjoy snacks, participate in fun activities, and have the chance to win great prizes. The event is free, but we ask that you bring a book to donate to the Police Athletic League. Log on to WJCT.org/events to reserve your space today.
Welcome back. Well, it's an incredible opportunity this week for the thousands of deserving local families on the First Coast who have men and women in uniform. Veterans Fair is coming up Friday in Jacksonville. Now, this is a one-stop shop for local veterans that are trying to connect to a whole range of services. Leanne Daddario is CEO of Hands On Jacksonville, and they're helping to administer this program for our frontline families. Leanne, good to see you.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
So how did this all come about?
Well, honestly, very quickly. Found out about it at the beginning of last week. And it is just amazing. This is what I love about my job, how people step up in such a quick fashion to help. So we have been having national service folks in our office for a long time, specifically AmeriCorps, and they are running a frontline family program. Mm-hmm. And their cohort class decided that this is what they wanted to do, was to give some wraparound services to veterans. So this has all happened in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I know.
And when you talk about wraparound services for veterans, what all does that entail?
Well, so we're going to have two mobile units. One's going to give medical services, and the other will give dental services. But wraparound services will also have benefits assistance. We will have shelter assistance, some entrepreneurial support, volunteer opportunities, information around the VA, and some legal information as well. So that's what I mean when I say wraparound.
And veterans in this area, we have a high veteran population with a deep well of needs. So this is coming at a good time for a lot of veterans that, when they come back from deployment, often struggle to reintegrate. This is a way to ease that transition.
Absolutely. And we work with our veteran population quite a bit. We really work specifically around volunteer opportunities because we know that volunteering can help them land jobs in that transition phase. But in this case, we're doing something a little bit different by giving these mobile services. Mm-hmm. And we've got a bunch of partners, Melissa. First of all, the city of Jacksonville has been tremendous, and I have to give a shout out to Ken Johnson and his team. They've been great in helping get the word out. But their Military Affairs and Veterans Department will be there. Five-star veterans will be there, Canine for Warriors, North Florida Women's Veteran, PanCare, Salzbacher Center, Veterans Outreach, Bunker Labs. Lots of folks are going to be joining us. I think we've got in the low 20s in terms of other vendors that'll be out there.
Now, this is all happening this Friday in downtown Jacksonville, Veterans Fair from 9 to 2 p.m., and the mobile labs will be parked in front of the Nonprofit Center.
Yep.
Let's tell people where that is.
40 East Adams, and it's at the corner of Ocean and Adams. Mm-hmm. And we'll be you won't be able to miss them. Some people think there'll be like some sports team or something in town, but no, it'll just be us.
And this is free. People
it
just need
free.
To come out and take advantage of it.
Yes, there is no RSVP. It is free. You just have to show up. And so this is our first time doing this. So I'm not sure how many people we'll have, but it's getting a lot of attention, like I said, in a very short period of time. So we're super excited. And outside of us being super excited, what we do as an organization is to invest in other people and pay it forward. And this is just another area where volunteers are doing this. I have to tell you, Melissa, that these doctors and dentists are donating their time.
Mm-hmm.
There is no charge. So again, this is kind of, you know, as a capacity organization that works around volunteerism and service, this is the kind of thing that jazzes me.
Absolutely. Again, it's this Friday's first Veterans Fair, brought to you by Hands On Jacksonville and their AmeriCorps program. This Friday in downtown Jacksonville, if you're a veteran and you need these services, just show up at the corner of Ocean and Adams at the Nonprofit Center of Northeast Florida, going on almost all day Friday. Leanne D'Addario, CEO of Hands On Jacksonville, putting your hands on all kinds of problems, and we are so glad you are. Thanks for being here.
No, thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.
This week on Invisibilia, we explore the power of clothing.
When you look in the mirror, you look like someone else, and then you feel like someone else.
The identities we take on.
Well, it's escapism.
How clothes can change us.
I was like a ghost almost.
And even save us.
I was different. I was different all the way through.
I'm Hanna Rosin. That's on the next Invisibilia from NPR.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Hi, I'm John Braun. I'm an emergency planner for the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Individuals with special needs should register annually for assistance with evacuation to shelters. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, speakers at the Republican National Convention address jobs and the economy. A convention update, analysis of Donald Trump's economic plans, and how his own successes and failures as a businessman could shape voter opinion.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, if you're a fan of Instagram, here's a chance to post something creative this week and also show how much you love public radio. It's our I Love WJCT contest. Every Friday, we are going to publish our favorite Insta of the week with the hashtag I Love WJCT in our newsletter, WJCT's First Read. You can subscribe to that at WJCTnews.org. Now, with this contest, we want you to find a creative and visual way to show us how much you love public radio. Look out for your Instagrams all week. Show us how you love public radio and why you like 89.9, and look for the Instagram winner this Friday in our First Read newsletter. You might have seen a lot of social media chatter meanwhile about The Coastal. It's a new online magazine providing a voice to Jacksonville's growing millennial generation. Editor Nathan Woods started this publication to reach out to a new generation here on the First Coast. And it's not just for millennials. Nathan Woods, good morning.
Good morning.
So what gave you this idea?
Well, I've always been a big writer, a big fan of writing. And, you know, I went away. I've lived here my whole life, and then I went away for college for four years. And I came back with kind of a new appreciation for the city. Because beforehand, I kind of thought, oh, there's nothing to do here. But now I kind of realize there's a lot to do. I just didn't know where to look. And so what I wanted to do was figure out a way to help other people my age find these things, and go out and find what is going on in the city.
And you came up with The Coastal. This is digital only for now.
Correct.
Right? Forbes just rated Jacksonville the number 2 location in the country for that people are looking to move to, not move away from.
Correct.
So are you trying to capitalize on some of that energy?
I am. And I think the biggest group that's really moving here right now is millennials, because they're seeing – we have this great job market. We have these growing tech and finance sectors, mm-hmm. where a lot of young people are looking to work in now. And I think they see that we also have really affordable living, a lot of available apartment space. And they're just seeing all of this and they're thinking, hey, why not try Jacksonville?
What have been some of the biggest challenges to launching a magazine? Because that's a heavy lift. And by the way, the website is coastaljacks.com.
It is. It's difficult, but I think just the biggest challenge is getting the word out there, making sure that people know about it. Beyond that, it's actually been a lot of fun.
And you're the editor. Your email address is right at the top. You want stories. You want content.
Absolutely. Yeah. If anyone has story submission ideas, guest blogs that they'd like to write, we're absolutely open to that. We want to hear everyone's voice. We want this to be a place for every millennial's voice to shine through.
Do you find, are you focusing mainly on the beaches, or are you trying to kind of cast a wider net all over the area?
We're trying to cast as wide of a net as we can, but of course, the main areas where young people tend to congregate in the city seems to be the beaches area and also downtown Riverside.
Sure. So those are your kind of two areas of interest. And it's interesting also to point out that Jacksonville is the youngest major city in Florida. I don't think people realize that.
It is.
There's a huge population of people under 35. Mm-hmm. What are they telling you they most want to hear about?
What they want to hear about is they want someone who's speaking to their perspective. They want, if they get history articles, they want to see what it means as far as where we are now and where we're going to be in the future. The big thing that's really been popular with people I've talked to is our Building Up Jacks series, which we do every Saturday, and that's where we give the latest development news on what's coming to the city.
In terms of new buildings and...
Right, new buildings, new retail, new restaurants, stuff like that, because people are really interested in seeing what's coming.
Yeah, and there is a lot coming. Is there anything you're about to report on that we haven't heard about yet?
Nothing big that I can think of right now, but... there's a lot of great stuff coming up that we already know about. Like, obviously, IKEA is coming to town.
Yeah.
A lot of new developments at the town center. Downtown's starting to ramp up again. The shipyards may get attended to eventually.
Maybe someday. We can only hope. Yeah. Well, in the meantime, you have a lot to cover. It's the new magazine in town, The Coastal. He's editor Nathan Woods, and visit them online. CoastalJacks.com, CoastalJacks.com. Thanks for being here, Nathan.
Thank you for having me.
And finally this hour, Memphis. The exciting summer musical at Players by the Sea opens Friday. We'll tell you about that in just a moment.
Cinema loves upward mobility.
A matchbox of our own. A fence. A three-wheel chain link.
How Hollywood stokes America's middle-class aspirations. That and the latest from the GOP convention. Next time on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
A year ago, Greece, deeply troubled Greece, decided to stay in the European Union. So, how's it going today?
It's like somebody is strangling us. It's like we have no hope. You cannot live like that. It's a matter of time that many small businesses will close.
I'm Kai Rizdal, in between a rock and a hard place, in Athens, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. That's a little music from Memphis, the exciting new summer musical at Players by the Sea. It opens Friday. Now, this 2010 Tony Award-winning show has a rousing score and an uplifting message, and it takes you back to the birth of rock and roll. We're pleased to welcome to the studio director Jeremy Rackett. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And cast members Rodney Holmes and Rashonda Foster. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This is such a fun show. As I mentioned, it won the Tony for Best Musical. It's had these amazingly successful national tours. Jeremy, the themes of this are, I think, resonant today.
Absolutely.
Tell us about Memphis.
Well, Memphis is a story loosely based off of the true story of Dewey Phillips, who in the 50s was a young DJ, white DJ, who was dealing with similar things that our character in this show is dealing with, falling in love with a black female artist and dealing with the issues that society had at that moment.
Society was trying to racially integrate at the time,
right.
And those struggles were played out on the radio.
Yeah, it was. So it's been... it's been something to see it come to life, you know, before us all. So.
Oh, yeah. Now, Rodney, you play the DJ in this production, Huey Calhoun, and he's based on a real Memphis disc jockey of the area, Dewey Phillips. Tell us about your part.
Right. So Huey, he really is that person in the 50s who was trying to help with the integration, trying to get rid of segregation, get this music on the radio. It was on the radio at the time, but it was on those stations that nobody ever listened to, you know?
Uh-huh.
So his big thing is getting it in the center of that radio dial, getting Felicia, who he falls in love with, on the air, getting her to sing for him. And it's such an important message of music is what brings us all together. It's that universal language, you know?
Mm-hmm. Rashonda, you play Felicia in the show. And younger people, it may seem incredible to them today, but in those days, most labels, most radio stations wouldn't play an integrated format, radio format.
Yes.
So this play is a history lesson for people as well as enjoying the music, it sounds
really
like.
It really is, and it just goes there. It's real, and it's in your face, and I think that message is very prominent today as well sometimes.
And I would think audiences, you know, with everything that's happened in the country over the last few weeks, especially, mm-hmm. it seems especially poignant.
Exactly. And that's why I feel like this is the perfect time to come out with this musical.
Now, you are going to sing a little bit for us. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
What are you going to sing?
One of the songs from the show, Love Will Stand.
Okay, great. This is Rashonda Foster, and this is a cut from the new production at Players by the Sea, Memphis.
The sun is sinking, at times got me thinking, as we grow old, will our love stay strong, or will it disappear? Tomorrow's unknown, but today is our own. So take my hand, hold on with no fear, cause baby I'm here.
Thank you. That's Rashonda Foster. Give her a hand.
It's that early morning thing.
It's beautiful. Now you play Felicia in this show, Jeremy, our director, Jeremy Rackett, you've got a really talented cast from what I've heard, in addition to these two.
Yes, they're amazing, hardworking.
Yeah. Yes. And what's it been like for you to direct this production? Because this is one that has a lot of moving parts. This is a really rousing musical.
It is. And the music with about 25 numbers in the show and all the moving set pieces, all the light cues in the show, the costumes, we have a cast of about 30. It's been a challenge. But with all the support from Players, our directors at Players, Joe Swartz, Bradley Akers, and the staff there, it's been an easier journey than I guess I thought I would have to go through for it. But it's been a task for us all. And it's a first for us all. My first musical directing first time for the music director, first time for the costume designer, first time for a lot of things. So we're in this together.
And for this part of Huey Calhoun, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but his romance with Felicia hits some bumpy roads, I think it's fair to say. Is that right?
Oh, most definitely. They have their issues, without giving too much away. But it's really this message of love finds a way, music finds a way, hope finds a way, really, is what it is.
And Huey's message, I'm looking here at the website, is that everybody wants to be black on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
You say that in the show.
How did that end up?
There are definitely a couple musical numbers that say that, so yeah.
Well, going out Friday night for the debut of Memphis, the Tony Award-winning musical. It is on stage beginning this Friday and runs through August 11th at Players by the Sea. Just get your tickets now at playersbythesea.org. Jeremy Rackett, the director, and cast members Rodney Holmes and Rashonda Foster. Break a leg, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a great show.
Thank you.
And that's our show, meanwhile. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, speakers at the Republican National Convention address jobs and the economy. A convention update and analysis of Trump's economic plans and how his own successes and failures as a businessman could shape voter opinion. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.